All right, welcome. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen.
That's actually,
that was terrific. Yeah.
Outstanding.
Welcome to the CDOT show presented by Inquirer Sports. We are live at Reds Fest. I am joined by the star of the show and my co-host, Trent Rosecrans. How are you, sir?
I'm fantastic. Here.
Fresh off of a Disney vacation with the family.
With the family, quick one with the family, and then quick trip to San Diego tomorrow.
Welcome home.
Thank you.
Are you excited about San Diego?
It's San Diego. Have you ever been to San Diego?
Oh, yes, absolutely.
Yes.
What is your work entail going to entail out there?
It's a weird working environment. The winter meetings are a lot of standing around and talking, a lot of nothing, but you have to be there.
Just in case, you
give beer to people to try to get them drunk and loose lips sink ships. And none of the Reds will do that. None of the Reds officials would accept any kind of beers from me, but other people might. So that's what we try to do.
Like for your job, is there like an anticipation or is it too much downtime that you can't?
There's an anticipation to get it done with.
Oh, really? But is it like if word starts to spread, you all take off running to get a microphone in front of someone, or is it not?
No, I mean, the thing is, it's like you have people from all over. So I'm probably hanging out with my friends who cover other teams and we do other stuff. And so all of a sudden you hear, oh, the Diamondbacks made a trade. And you're like, oh, poor Nick. And you just see Nick bolt. Okay. And you don't know where Nick is. And you're like, I guess Nick's not going to dinner. Luckily, we've not had many interruptions of dinner plans over the last couple of years at the winter meetings. So I've had uninterrupted dinners, which is what's most important.
Well, enjoy your time out there. We'll get to our guests in just a second. Want to remind everyone we are sponsored by Cincy Shirts. So go to Cincy Shirts, use promo code CDOT, save 20% on your order, and check out the brand new Cincy Shirt store on Main Street in Over the Rhine. Our guest this month is actually a returning guest as well. He joined us last year at Reds Fest, and we are happy to have him back. He is Jeff Grappe. He is the Director of Player Development for the Cincinnati Reds. Thank you for joining us once again this year, sir.
No, thanks for having me, guys. This is it's always a blast.
Now, we'll get into like what's going on during this off season, but I was in the Reds Wiffle Ball Home Run Derby yesterday again for probably the fourth or fifth year now, and in that Home Run Derby, the local celebrities are paired up with Reds minor league prospects.
Yeah.
And this year was the first year that after one of the players would get done batting, they would do an interview. And I was just curious, like, how early do you get these guys in the process? Do you only handle major leagues? Do you handle them as soon as they're drafted? Or do you just manage the people that that talk to the prospects and so that there's sort of a uniform policy that'll guide them all the way through?
Yeah, essentially, so my direct responsibility is the minute a guy is signed or drafted, he comes under my umbrella until he goes to the major league level. So all those young guys, that's kind of my direct responsibility, overseeing them, coming up with a plan that's going to get them to Cincinnati as soon and as effectively as possible. So hopefully they all held themselves well yesterday in the tournament. Who were you paired with?
They did great. I was paired with Robert Stevenson, who is...
That's a bad swing.
It's not pretty, but luckily we're not, as Reds fans, we're not counting on him to produce at the plate.
Word was Iglesias hit some bombs.
You know who hit some bombs was Winker, which was not a surprise to me, but it was a nice, sweet swing. Just cranking them right over the wall.
You heard of this guy?
A little bit.
But what was funny to me is they... You know, it's a wiffle ball home run derby. Everybody's joking around, but when it came time for them to give an interview, they took it pretty seriously. And I didn't know if that is by design or if they just aren't far enough along in the process to know when it's okay to be sarcastic. Or
no, they it beat into them pretty much from day one that things like this, coming to Reds Fest, even doing the interviews, I mean, that's an honor to them, and they. Coming from like the smaller media markets of the minor leagues, they really appreciate this. Every kid I've seen so far has been blown away, especially the ones who were here for the first time.
Yeah.
And then you get a couple of the repeaters that now have their feet wet, understand a little more. But I do know, I mean, a couple of them were pissed yesterday post-wiffle ball. So there's some competitive kids.
Yeah, Stevenson didn't help me out any. But it is still fun to, you know, like I've been doing this for, man, 6 or 7 years now. And the first year that I did it was the first year that Todd Frazier was here. It was his first year. And so he didn't really know anybody, and I didn't really know a lot of people, especially players. And he and I just hit it off. And, like, he's the one person that I've been able to stay in contact with and be friends with. And it's been really cool to see him evolve from, like, this shy guy who kind of stood over in the corner who was just happy to be here to, you know, an all-star in Major League Baseball.
Level. Yeah. No, I mean, I would echo a lot of that. I mean, from my position overseeing the minor leagues, it's really, really rewarding when you see guys who've, I mean, this has been what they wanted to do since they were 5 years old.
Right.
Every kid grows up, dreams, want to play in the big leagues. They get the chance to sign, they're blown away. And then just the chance to, like, come here, see this, it just puts everything in perspective, gives them a little carrot that I want to go from a gray minor league jersey to a red big league jersey and see everything. So,
And it seems like that, you know, Reds fans tend to pride themselves on knowing a lot more than just the current major league roster. So I bet it's probably cool for some of these guys who may not think they're anybody yet, for people to already know so much about them just because of how well-versed Reds fans are and who's in the system.
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely a plus of our fan base, when we come from a really intelligent, well-researched fan base that kind of holds us accountable for what we say as well. So these guys know that there's a responsibility that comes with this as well. Hopefully they've all had good experiences here, and it'll take them into their training, and we'll see a good 2015 season from
absolutely them. And it's got to be good too that you get some of these guys who are members of the Reds for a long time to be able to tell these younger guys what to expect and kind of tell them what's expected of them. And it's so cool to just see these so many players, past, present, and future, happy to be here.
Yeah. You know? No, I mean, this is a really unique event, and I think it's a great tribute to the guys in the business department that throw it on. The fan base is incredible, and I mean, we really do all enjoy it, so it's a really, really cool weekend.
I'll let Trent hop in here because I'm excited off-season. It's funny because we're not being broadcasted here at the event, so people are seeing Trent and they're walking up and asking for pictures. I'm pretty sure one woman just asked him where the restroom was, so it's funny that he's getting bombarded while we're recording. But
yet you're the celebrity.
No, that's why I'm behind
you're Mr. Celebrity Softball. You're in the celebrity poker tonight?
I'll do the celebrity poker tonight
so,
as well.
Yeah, so who's really the celebrity here?
I think we all know that you're the guy. So so I'll let you two talk, because I'm excited to hear about this, because this is a very interesting offseason for the Reds based on what we just happened in 2014, people who are going to be free agents this year, some of the free agents out there. A lot could go either way this year, and I need some insider info.
I mean, Jeff, your focus really isn't as much what's going to happen in 2015 as it is 16, 17, 18, 19.
Yeah.
I mean, whoever they get to play left field probably isn't, you know, it's not, well, Jeff, what do you think? Yeah, yours is more like, well, if we signed a guy for 2 years, what do you think about 2017?
Right. Yeah, I mean, the way our front office dynamic works is Walt Jocketty and Dick Williams kind of oversee everything with the major league level. And then we've got a bunch of really other great guys. Nick Brawl, Sam Grossman do a lot of more of the major league focus. I'm kind of in the minor league side, but we're all collaborating and going over everything. We all see different players just through our travels. So Walt and Dick do a really nice job, I think, of involving everyone, getting some groupthink going, and hopefully the right name bubbles to the top. So I think there's definitely some focus on this year, but yeah, the primary responsibility is what's down the pipe.
Well, that was my question. You know, I was going to kind of a question. What does a director of player development do?
Yeah, so I guess the best way to describe it is kind of going through a calendar year, starting with the June draft. Sit through Chris Buckley's meetings, listen to all his kind of opinions on the young players.
Right.
And then at the end of the draft, or at the end of signings in Latin America, got a little bit of a background of what they thought about this player before we acquired him. From there, say a Jesse Winker gets drafted, have a discussion with Chris and his staff about where they think he needs to improve, what his strengths are, what his weaknesses. That way we've got a base before we ever even see the player, and we can come up with a plan that starts that day. So really, the minute a guy signs, a plan goes into place, and then it's just adjusted and tweaked as he plays. But we're constantly measuring through analytics, through scouting reports, through coaches' kind of development reports, and adjusting what we're doing and trying to get these guys to Cincinnati as quickly as they can, but also making sure that they're as prepared as we can make them for their arrival.
Well, and that's kind of a question I was going to go off of. You know, I hear a lot of people say, well, just throw Jesse Winker out there in left field. I mean, how do you know when a guy's ready? And I know it's an inexact science, and every organization's a little bit different. Just as drafting a guy isn't an exact science, so too is promoting a guy.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's really, you look at several things. You try to see how in control of a guy's game he is, along with having success. I mean, a lot of the things we look were really important on strikeout to walk and base running efficiency, defensive efficiency, and trying to put everything together. But at the end of the day, all the minor leagues can provide is an accomplished minor league player. The major league level, it's the biggest jump. I mean, everyone talks about A-ball to double-A or even double-A to triple-A, but until they see the speed of the game and understand that not only can they keep up with it, but they can thrive in that environment, that's why the major league coaching staff and Brian Price and his staff are tremendous in the fact that they're constantly developing guys at that level as well. Development doesn't end when a guy makes his major league debut. So,
just your responsibility.
Yeah, just I get to turn the page.
They're off the hook.
Exactly. He got there.
And they forget who you are.
Exactly.
I mean, like, Todd Frazier doesn't know who you are anymore, does he?
I'm not going to say any names.
But Todd Frazier.
No, Todd's great. We're great with Todd.
But, like, what are some of the disadvantages? How can you tell a guy has gotten there too quickly and then maybe you've done that?
I think a lot of times, I mean, at the end of the day, you'd love for everyone to get to the big leagues. I think you look at performance, and that tells you a lot, but it's more important to me that whether a guy goes up and hits 300 or hits 100, I mean, obviously we're hoping for the first one, but how does he carry himself and how does he play? I mean, does he still run the bases hard? Does he play good defense? We stress every day with our minor league guys that every day they need to do something to help their team win. Even if you go over 4, you better make a pretty good play. You better run the bases smart. You need to do something that's going to help the team that day. So, to me, as long as the guy's up there and he's carrying himself well, he's respecting his teammates, respecting the game, that's all we can really accomplish in the minor leagues, and then hope that these guys can keep up with the speed of the game and thrive in that environment.
The other thing I wanted to ask about, you know, this is something we didn't get to do last time you were on because it was a little different show this time. It's a little different show this time than our usual, but my go-to question is always, I'm always interested in how guys get to where they are.
Yeah.
And you're a relatively young guy in a pretty big position. I know you're part of the Nick Kroll pipeline.
Yeah.
We've talked about Nick on the show a lot without ever having him because, you know.
Yeah, the Belichick coaching tree.
It's like the Nick Kroll coaching tree with the Reds. But how, I mean, because you were a college baseball player, right?
Yep. Yeah,
Let's start there.
Yeah, I mean, I went to small liberal arts school outside of Philadelphia, Haverford College, which played baseball. We weren't very good. We did the best we could. We had a lot of fun with it. But at the end of the day, I realized that I wasn't going to be signing a contract.
So Chris Buckley didn't see you play.
You know, I tell Chris all the time that I must have just never seen him. I never noticed him at the games. So he's everywhere, but somehow he missed me. Eventually realized that if I wanted to stay in the game, I was going to have to find something else to do. One of my kind of neighbors down the street growing up was an area scout for the Minnesota Twins. So from high school on, I was able to go to games with him.
Really? So you're a high school guy going with a professional scout. So this was like probably not Phillies games, but like Lehigh Valley, kind of area.
We went down to Maryland.
Was he a pro scout or an amateur
scout?
So okay, so you went to other high school games.
High school. Saw Todd Frazier. I mean, saw a lot of guys that kind of helped me see early what real good players look like. And then when you go home as a 17-year-old boy and realize that you're not one of them, you got to figure out what else you're going to do. So
that's good. I mean, at least you got to 17. I always remember that. Like, I had that aha moment when I was like 10.
Yeah.
And my friend Jimmy was like, he's really good.
Yeah.
I'm not. I got to find a different way. But it's exactly the same kind of thing. No, he played in the majors, though. He played in 5 years, so I was early scout, too.
Awesome. Were you able to write about him early? Like, 10-year-old, like, my friend Jimmy is really good.
I didn't do that at 10, but I did that at, like, 23 when he was with the Pirates and awesome. I went over to Atlanta.
Perfect.
So, talked about that. But, yeah. So, I mean, that's the thing is, like, you found a way. But you knew pretty early, like, 17, you could see in other people that... You're like, I'm going to have fun playing baseball as long as I can.
Yeah, and I mean, it was one of those ones where you don't want to go to Division I scholarship and have to survive every year and be the worst player on the team, or do I want to go play and have fun? So kind of did what I could, and then ended up with an internship through Nick and the Reds afterwards. I mean,
because was 2007 you were a video guy, right?
Yep, so 2006 was my internship, which was the mass mailing everywhere, sitting at home with mom over Christmas break, stuffing hundreds of envelopes. And
so you literally had hundreds of envelopes. You send like every major league team, every minor league team,
my first thought was, I think I sent it to every general manager, assistant general manager, and scouting director. And tried not to bombard everybody with the whole office, but I think I tried to make sure that it was sent and seen, and then
but at least somebody in every major league office would see it.
Yeah, and then you hear from about 25%, and maybe 25% of those people want to talk to you. And I was lucky enough to land in Cincinnati, which was really, I mean, a great gig for me. So,
well, tell people about that, because you and I were talking before we started. Like, even growing up in New Jersey, you were a Reds fan.
Yeah, which is, I mean, really kind of goofy as a kid growing up. I grew up in Northwest New Jersey in a really rural town, but I remember the 1990 World Series. It was kind of my first baseball memory, where I was able to truly follow it. Was a huge Reds fan from then on, and then I was saying, like, at the one sporting goods store in Blairstown, New Jersey, there's not a whole lot of Reds gear, so
right.
There's a lot of funny childhood pictures of me and ill-fitting Reds clothes, because if there was a shirt, my mom or dad would buy it, but we'd wear it for about 2 weeks or 15 years. And
yep. I grew up a Royals fan all over everywhere but Missouri. So,
yeah. So you know what I mean? You're surviving with what you can.
So let's talk about this year and it's kind of the current climate, because I'm interested, you know, a name that keeps getting thrown out in rumors is Cespedes from the Red Sox and our need at left field. Do they involve you in the process of, you know, determining, like, you know, here's a guy, if we got him, we might only have him for 1 year. Is that enough to fill in, you know, the gap between maybe when a Jesse Winker or someone else is ready? Are you involved in that process at all to kind of say, you know, not just will this guy fit, but for how long we could have him, what's our plan for if we weren't able to keep him?
Yeah, I mean, with our market size, knowing when we think we can get contributions from our young players is important. A few weeks ago, we had all of our player development staff, all of our pro scouting staff together in Arizona, kind of mapping out what we thought we could expect over the next couple of years. Trying to, as best we could, pin down the inexact science of when we think guys are not only ready to debut, but when they would be truly effective contributors. So that was a fun exercise. Took a lot of time, but it was really worthwhile. And then from there, I think that's just one of the tools that Walt can use when he makes some of these decisions of, okay, I've got X, Y, and Z at this position. This is when I think they'll be ready. How do certain other guys fit? So
right. That's very cool.
Yeah.
So, you know, one of the things I've kind of wanted to talk to you about is, the other part, I know this is kind of going in the, your bio type thing. So you went from kind of just as a general internship to then you were the video guy for what, a year?
3 years.
3 years.
Yeah.
3 years. And that was traveling and all sorts of different stuff.
It's a really fun job with the young, for a young guy. Travel-wise, I mean, the Major League travel, I think the average fan would be surprised at how rigorous it is for these players. I know charter jets and nice hotels sounds amazing, and it these guys are taken care of the best they can considering the schedule. But the 162-day schedule with knowing exactly where you're going to be every day is tough. I mean, you know,
really?
You travel it too. So it.
My planes aren't as nice as those.
Exactly, and that's what I mean. There's no complaints, but I think you'd agree.
You understand.
Travel is rigorous.
I mean, and I don't think people understand what it takes out of you just the travel. And there's a lot of people out there who travel a lot for their jobs.
Yeah.
And a lot of people who don't travel like a major leaguer or stay in major league places, but they also understand what it's like and just how it can beat at you.
Oh yeah. No, I mean that's the thing. So. I would say the best part of doing the video and the advanced scouting, preparing for the next series with the upcoming opponent, was just being around the Major League coaching staff and Major League players, seeing what an average Major League player looks like, a great one, a struggling one, and then learning kind of what these guys are doing. So I think it definitely helps set up me going forward and kind of helps with any sort of development.
But is the scouting, I mean, that's a tough, it's a tough gig. And there's actually a scout school.
Yeah.
And you went there, was it 8, 9?
I'm blanking, but it was. But it was
yeah, and I mean, I this is that you go out in Arizona.
Yeah.
It's and you learn to be a scout.
Yeah, it's 2 weeks of going to games every day. The Major League Scouting Bureau, which actually is going to be head up by Bill Bavese now.
Right.
Left us and was a great guy. I think it's going to flourish going forward. They take in basically 2 to 3 kids per team, per organization, get sponsored, plus a couple other former players come. And you're doing a lot of report writing. Basically, they tell you how to structure your thoughts. And I think a lot of people can look at a player and decide, I like this guy or I don't like this guy. But figuring out why and where you think he's going to go, it really helps you organize and then with the report writing. Where if I say, this guy's a good runner, my grades better match that.
And right.
Kind of being able to present a concise report to Walt and his staff, and I think the scout school is really helpful and beneficial for that.
Because there's a really big difference between, hey, this guy's a really good minor league player and a prospect.
Yeah, no, without a doubt. I mean, factoring in age, experience, everything, I mean, they help you with that. And I personally don't believe that anyone can tell you what to see and teach you how to see. I mean, you're either going to like a guy or you're not going to like him.
And sometimes do you not like have a reason why? You're just like, something about this guy I don't really like and I don't know why.
Yeah, but I mean, that's the whole thing of organizing your thoughts and trying to figure out what.
It's the godfather himself here.
Yeah, and a king of the interns.
King of the interns. It's quite the title. There's Nick Kroll, by the way, just coming in, making faces and running away when I scared once I said something about it. Sorry about that.
No, but that's what I mean.
Play Nick.
Just help, yeah. No, that's our guy.
But, I mean, and so that's one of those things that's kind of tough because a lot of times guys look at numbers, and I'll bring this up. You know, this year the numbers on Robert Stevenson were not what you expect for this being the top prospect, the numbers. And then, like, I talked to several scouts who saw him, and they just go, oh, Robert Stevenson? Worried about him?
Yeah, no. No,
and it's funny because then you look at his numbers, he's like 7-10 with a 3.9 or 4 or something ERA, and you're just like, shouldn't I be worried about this guy? And you see his walks go up this year, and like every scout just goes, no, don't.
Yeah, and I mean, from the scouting side, they're kind of looking at his raw ability and trying to see what he can do and project it going forward. From my seat personally, going forward, it's all about, okay, what did we learn last year? And it's not only evaluating where we think Robert's going to get to and what he's going to be in the future, but how are we going to do it? I mean, this year we learned that, or not, Robert, I think, would personally tell you that he learned a lot this year. He learned how to mix his pitches more efficiently. He learned how to be down in the zone and things that he's going to take from this year and be better going forward. I think a lot of times with top talented kids, I mean, top prospects, we can call them, who struggle for the first time at the major league level have a much more difficult time than guys who struggled, bounced back, and learned how to come back from that adversity. So,
and not to throw anybody on the spot or anything, Jay Bruce was a guy who never struggled in the minors.
Yeah.
And I mean, Joey Votto was a guy who did struggle in the minors.
Yeah, and I think, I mean, I don't want to speak for them. I think they've both said over the last few years a couple times that through their different experiences, they both learned different things. And
of course, you also had everybody in the world, you know, Jay Bruce was the minor league player of the year, and so there are, of course, expectations. And then there weren't the expectations for Joey Votto, so maybe it gives you, in the media and whatever, a little extra grace. You know, when Joey came in, nobody was expecting him to be, you know, the guy, an MVP.
Yeah.
And then he becomes an MVP. Jay, everybody expect to have three MVPs by now, and to be, what Mike Trout is.
I have a question. Do you have, you talked about career minor league guys. Is it important to have guys like that in the system? I mean, Corky Miller comes to mind of someone who's spent so much time in the minor leagues, and it sort of parallels like a Crash Davis, Bull Durham. But is it important to have guys that you know aren't going to get past a certain level, but they're going to be very valuable as people are passing through?
Yeah, I mean, these guys set the tone of what professionals should look like. I mean, Corky is a great example.
They should look like Corky.
I think at AA this year we had Ray Chang, who is an infielder. He was a tremendous kind of role model mentor for some of the kids there. At High A we had Marquez Smith, who, similar things. I mean, I think if you talk to guys who are on the Bakersfield team this year, that's the guy they look to a lot for, okay, I'm struggling, what's a professional do in this moment?
Yeah.
Or how do I pick up one little thing that's going to make me better? So having the right guys with, we use the term makeup, which is really just kind of what's a guy going to bring to the table every day from a mental side and a professional side.
Yeah.
Having those guys who are going to be quality pros around your young guys is so important.
And do those guys embrace that, or are they always thinking that there's a chance they're going to?
I think every
I'm just
player,
curious, you know, like if you probably know who's not going to get past a certain level. Do they know that? And
yeah, I mean,
and
we're
okay
honest with them in their evaluations, because these guys, they understand that the role that they're in is important. And I think those are discussions that I have with these guys going into the season when we sign them. This is what I think the role is going to be. But with that said, every player that wears a uniform thinks they have a chance. And
sure.
They need to think they have a chance.
Absolutely.
In order to one day keep
even as a role model, they can't feel like there's nothing to play for.
If you go for over 4 and you mail it in, now you've totally wiped out all of your credibility.
Right, of setting the tone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, and I mean, Corky was a guy like that. I think so many years, and you talk to Devin Mesoraco, and a lot of that's because you probably don't, you have what, 2 coaches, 3 coaches on every minor league squad. You need more than that for when you're developing. That's
exactly.
Part of your job is to identify. Yeah. Do you have like a list of guys that are like, I don't know, almost like para coaches almost?
Oh, yeah. I mean, we talk all the time, and I guess the only parallel I can give is like a kid with their parents. I mean, growing up, when your parents tell you, stop doing this, stop doing this, stop doing this, there's only so many times they can do it before it starts losing a little bit of traction. But when one of your buddies says, hey, you're screwing up, stop doing that, it really hits home.
Especially so having, like if you're on a baseball team in high school and you're a sophomore that's pretty good and you're kind of screwing around, and the senior, even if he's not the star, says, stop.
Exactly.
That's, yeah.
I mean, this.
Especially if they look like Corky.
Yeah, I mean, having kind of some constructive discussion with your peers is so worthwhile. And these guys, I mean, when they're on the bus trips and they're tired, just having someone say like, hey, it could be worse.
That's actually my favorite quote of all time, again, comes from Corky.
Yeah.
With spring training, a young guy was complaining about signing autographs. Corky turned to him and said, if you don't like it, play worse.
Yeah, I mean, that's...
And it's just like, and that guy got it immediately.
What an ism that is.
And how great is that?
Yeah, it's perfect. And that's the kind of thing you're looking for when you're putting together a 25-man minor league roster, because you can't have 25 guys on the field at the same time. So you need some sort of role player. And I mean, there's a litany of guys. I mean, Ray Chang, Marquez Smith, Frank Pfister. Ton of guys that you can have, they're going to make everyone around them better. And it's a really important role for us, and I hope they feel as appreciated as we.
Of course, the hidden secret of that is like a AAA. I'm guessing Corky made more AAA than the manager did.
Yeah, I mean, some of these AAA guys make a lot of money, so it's not a bad gig.
Now, this week we saw Chris Heisey go to the Dodgers. I'm always intrigued by trades like that because, you know, around here, people see him as, like, the consummate professional, nice guy. Didn't always produce when given a lot of opportunities. And the guy we're getting from the Dodgers, the pitcher, it seems like a lot of people have that same vibe about him. And I'm just curious, like, is that just strictly like a needs thing where you're like, you know, this guy was starting for the Dodgers. We see him more as a middle reliever. They could use a guy that could platoon in center field with the production that Heisey typically puts up. I mean, is it just a good fit that way? I mean, I know a lot of people get upset when a good guy has to go out of town, but you know.
No, and I think that's the first, I mean, Chris, he is a great guy.
Yeah.
I think anybody that comes in contact with Chris Heisey will tell
easily.
You that.
Easily, yeah.
I mean, there are tough decisions to make, and having that personal kind of relationship and knowing what he brings to the table off the field makes some of these things more difficult. But when it comes down to trade discussions, I think you have to kind of have a little bit of a give and take and weigh what's important. McGill with the Dodgers is a guy that we think was probably out of his role. We think in a bullpen he might be able to be a little more effective. Coming from a tough pitcher's environment, the PCL, I mean, just a lot of factors that we weighed in, combined with his raw ability, make him an interesting target for us. So.
And I just forgot my follow-up question to that, if Trent has one.
Wow, you threw me off guard.
I know what it was. I'm sorry. So you were talking before about when you draft a player and you want to speak to people who've coached them in the past. Does any of that come into play with trades? I mean, obviously, in getting the trade done, you want to present someone with all their best feet forward. Yeah. But once the trade happens, do you reach out to anyone in the Dodgers or even former teammates? Like, do you try to find out more about the guy that you just picked up than maybe what you were told before the trade?
I think if we have contacts in other organizations, it's kind of the same thing. It's like if I have a buddy over there that I know and trust, I can reach out and talk to him. But we're in a really competitive environment. It's tough to root for your neighbor to do real well a lot of times.
Yeah.
So I think we have to rely on the scouts that saw him. And part of their job is not just to break down his physical ability, but also to break down how we think he'll fit in a clubhouse. What is he, an intelligent guy? Is he a good guy? So kind of putting that all together.
And that goes up to the major league level. I tell the story and I leave out a lot of the particulars, but I had someone last year, maybe it was 2 years ago, ask me about a guy, a free agent who was with the Reds, and a guy I know with another team said, hey, how was he in the clubhouse? What did you see in the clubhouse? And I said, you know, I thought this guy was great in the clubhouse. I saw all sorts of different people around him that I always just kind of asked him questions. And that team ended up signing the guy.
Yeah.
Not because of me, but I think, you know, I was one of probably many voices telling him the same thing. A guy like Ramon Santiago, you talk about at the minor league levels, you have those coaches. Well, that happens at the major league level, too.
Yeah.
Where a guy like Ramon Santiago is still in the game because everybody loves Ramon Santiago. He's a good guy, a good fit, who understands his role. And, you know, I think I remember talking to Chris Heisey about that, and him talking about Miguel Cairo taught him how to be a bench player.
Yeah.
Have those guys, and I can see Chris Heisey, his career could be 2-3 years longer because he's a good guy.
No, I think undoubtedly. I mean, you get the clubhouse dynamic is such a delicate balance. And you want guys competing, and I think Brian Price and Steph put it really well, that you do want guys competing and kind of being on edge and have to do something, but it all needs to gel and mesh with that 25-man attitude all going the same direction. So putting the right personalities is a responsibility that I know Walt and his staff and kind of us in the minor league side, we take it very seriously.
Now, what about going the opposite way with a guy like McGill coming in who has been, it sounds like he's been groomed to become a starter. Is it a delicate process to say, hey, we're happy to have you, but we don't see you as a starter? Like, do you have to, what that situation like of kind of telling someone that their role maybe isn't as big as they had hoped it could be with their previous organization?
A lot of it is, we don't make any changes before we see guys. And I think just because we've talked about Miguel fitting in a bullpen type role doesn't mean that we're ruling anything out.
Sure.
And we kind of do that. We do the exact same thing in the draft. If you get drafted, you were signed and drafted for a reason. We won't change anything with a player mechanically at all until the first instructional league. So he gets a full season to play the way he wants to play. We'll talk to him about mental approach. We'll talk to him about pitch selection. We'll talk about all stuff like that. But
he won't change the mechanics.
He won't change a guy mechanically just because he needs to either figure out, is this going to work or is it not going to work?
Yeah.
And then from there, you get a lot more open dialogue. But
That's really cool to hear that, of just like...
Well, because sometimes things work that you can't teach.
Yeah. I mean, you don't want to... Jerry Walker, one of our top evaluators, has always said, like, you got to be really careful when you polish up a pitcher's delivery because you might polish them up just easy enough to get rocked. I mean, some of these guys survive on their deception and some of their unnatural kinks that make these hitters really tough.
Tony Cingrani, you wouldn't teach.
Yeah,
what I mean, he does.
Exactly. And there's just guys that you don't want to change everything and make it a nice, easy timing delivery that now hitters can stay in tune with. So
that brings up something, and this is kind of tangential. With a guy, Alex Blandino, is a guy that you guys got out of Stanford. And there's a thing called the Stanford swing.
Yeah.
Does he have the Stanford swing? And B, what is the Stanford swing?
There's a lot of talk, and it's one of the things, I mean, it gets to be a little bit of the old wives' tale of that players at Stanford all kind of did things the same way, where I think it kind of gets a little bit of life and kind of gets its own momentum rolling. I don't know if Alex has the Stanford swing, but Alex has a really good swing. For a kid who's his size, I mean, he's probably 6 foot and well put together, but not He-Man by any means. He's got really good power to all fields. He's got a great approach, and he knows how to kind of get barrel to the ball as often as he can. So he's a guy that we're really excited about, and he's one of the better young hitters that we have in our system.
And that's the other thing, is if he does or does not have it, you don't mess with it now.
No, I mean, there's, for the first season, I mean, go out and play. Just because, like I said, there are a lot of scouts that saw you, Chris Buckley and his staff, saw something in you that says, I want to give you this bit of money, I want to give you, take you in this round, so you deserve to be a professional based on what you've done. So I think it's unfair to immediately take that away from a kid. So
it's also keeping him in position sometimes, like that. Yeah. You've done, he's going to stay at shortstop. Todd Frazier was at shortstop for quite a while.
Yeah, and those are all decisions that we make. I mean, that one's a little different just in terms of our philosophy is to keep guys on priority positions as long as we can. So if you have any chance to play shortstop, you're going to play it for as long as we can get you to do it. Until you prove to us that maybe we need to make a move, or if your bat is way advanced to your glove, which I think is something you saw with Billy Hamilton.
Yeah, I was going to say Billy Hamilton wasn't.
I mean, Billy, almost unanimously in our organization, we believe that Billy could have been a major league shortstop. It's just his running ability, his offensive abilities were ahead of where the glove was at the time. So let's put him in the outfield, take a little pressure off of that part of his game. And we also thought he'd be pretty good out there too, which
I was going to say, the speed makes him a better
center. Were you surprised at how good he was in the outfield?
I'm surprised at how quickly it came.
Okay, that's probably a very fair assessment.
I think he's gotten to where we all thought he would get quicker than we thought, just because it's not easy. And I think his time in the infield will make him a much better outfielder in the end, just because shortstops are involved in every single play. You're always moving. And so little things. I think you see Billy not take unnecessary chances throwing in order to keep a double play in order.
Because he's thinking like a shortstop,
exactly.
Like, damn, that outfielder screwed it up.
Exactly. So I think by being in the infield, being in such a crucial position, he's taken that mentality out with him. And I think it's going to make him only that much better going forward.
Well, couldn't the same thing be said of Frazier and Mesoraco, just based on their numbers in the minors and sort of coming up more to fill needs than the fact that they were truly ready, and then kind of surprising everyone with just how like Todd especially, and Devin even, based on his years in the major, the year in the major prior to this past year, where it seemed like there was a lot of doubt, you know, losing Hannigan and, you know, not really knowing much about Brian Pena. And
yeah,
all of a sudden both of them are all-stars.
Exactly, and I think you get, I mean, Mesoraco is a guy that, I mean, he came through our system. He's extremely talented. I think one of the hardest things for a young player at the major league level is coming up and not playing every day. Whereas, I mean, these guys are used to a routine, playing 5-6 days a week, understanding exactly what's going on, that they're going to play today. And if you come up there and you're a two-time, three-time-a-week player, it's very difficult. So I think Devin was just having the chance to play. Todd, it was, where are we going to get the bat in the lineup? Because we know he's really good defensively at a bunch of different spots. I mean, Todd's a really good defensive left fielder, really good right fielder. He's played shortstop, he's played second, he's played first, third. I mean, if you go back through his history, I think he played outfield on Team USA probably like 4 years ago. So, I mean, this is a guy who's done a lot of really important things. And with him, it was all about how can we get him in the lineup daily and where's it going to happen. And now he's settled in and he's pretty much got a position, he's locked down. But
yeah, it's so fun to, you know, we talked about this with, his name escapes me now, the head of scouting.
Sorry, that's just kind of
Todd Benzinger, we should tell everybody. It gets a little crazier because people are just walking by. And then out of nowhere, Todd Benzinger just
comes over and I'm like, hey, you want to be on this show sometime? So always working, always working.
You guys are
so
awesome.
But we were talking about how it seems like with the Reds, prior to 2014, it was always, you know, you're going to get this from these core group of guys, and if we can just get a little bit more from this other pool of players, we got a chance to be really good. And this year was kind of the opposite. It was the unknowns really stepped up. Some of them were all-stars, Alfredo, Simon, Frazier, Mesoraco, and we didn't quite get the production from Votto, Bruce, Phillips. That's why, you know, I've always been very adamant that I'm the biggest optimist, especially when it comes to being a Reds fan. But it does make it look very promising for next year, that if we can get what's expected of the bigger name players and the production we had from those other guys stays up, they really can't compete with anybody, especially with the pitching they have.
Yeah, and that's what we're hopeful of. I mean, there's a lot of optimism in our room that if we can combine health with further development, that we're going to be pretty good. But health is a huge wild card, and we found that out again this year. We'd had a great track record of being healthy, and we've been, I don't want to say lucky, because our strength conditioning staff, our medical staff are top notch. They do a great job of preventative care, but there's only so many years you can go in a row, I think, before some injury bug jumps up and bites you. So
yeah, well, Trent,
you want to take
else?
Just a second, and then we might run through some individual players. Is that cool? We're going to take a little break,
problem.
Catch our breath, and do that. And I'd love to hear just about some of these individual guys that you know more about than probably most people.
All right, no problem.
All right, cool. This is C-Dot Show. We'll take a break. This is kind of our usual break time.
Yep.
But this is a little different.
Yeah.
A little different.
Live at Reds Fest, and we'll be right back.
All right.
Okay, we're back. We're back live from Reds Fest. This is the C-Dot Show presented by Inquirer Sports. Josh Sneed here with co-host Trent Rosecrans. Our guest this week is the Director of Player Development for the Cincinnati Reds, Jeff Grappe. And Trent, you said you have some players in the system you'd like to ask.
I want to
Jeff
talk a
about.
Little bit about, you know, some. These will mostly be the top guys that we talk about. And we'll start right at the top. We talked a little bit about them, but Robert Stevenson. Was top prospect last year, probably like by Baseball America. Pretty sure he'll be the Baseball America's top prospect again this year. What makes Robert so good? I mean, we see the velocity, but it's more than that as well.
Yeah, I mean, the first thing it's easy to look at, like you said, is the velocity. I mean, he has plus arm strength. We've had him 95 to 99 consistently over the course of seven innings.
And so that's like, when you say, you say there's a difference between pitching at and touching.
Yeah.
This is a guy who pitches at 95 to 99?
Yeah, I mean, he's up there. Occasionally he'll back down in certain counts, but, I mean, that's where he's going. Really effective hammer curveball. developing changeup that's at least average now. And I think what he's figuring out right now is how to mix effectively, how to get all pitches over and all counts. And once we get that, I think he's got a chance to be really special.
One of the things I saw in spring, and spring seems to be such a good time for young guys, especially guys who have dominated the minors.
Yeah.
I saw him throwing some 98, just these high straight fastballs, and those major league guys just jumping on it.
Yeah.
Is that one of those things that you'd love these guys to face, especially guys who've had success, to face a major leaguer that can spit on a 98 mile an hour fastball?
Yeah, no, I mean, putting guys in that environment is great. And it's a lot of what we talked about with, sometimes you have to manufacture situations to get some adversity, just to see how a guy reacts. Whether that's in an individual game, maybe leaving him in when he's tired, or putting him in a major league camp and letting him experience some of those things. So there were a lot of really good learning moments for Robert this year.
And because Robert had that in spring. I saw him quite a few times in spring. You guys got him in some major league games. And then he struggled a little bit during the offseason, or during the season. But this is a guy that the future, I mean, this is a potential number one. And those are rare.
Yeah. No, I mean, there's not a whole lot of guys with Robert's physical ability out there. And when you combine how intelligent he is,
that's the other thing. Like, when you talk to Robert, this is a guy, he was he valedictorian or maybe?
He was way up there.
He was at the top of his class. And you could
tell. He was up there. He was going to University of Washington. He was going to be, I mean, a student athlete. Like, he was prepared to, I mean, he's a kid who likes going to class. He likes learning. So there's a lot of really good with Robert Stevenson.
Speaking of smart individuals who are going to be ranked high and a lot of fun to talk to, Jesse Winker.
Yeah.
We hear so much about it. The one thing with Jesse, it seems to me, is I love, and I put this up on, a blog and on Twitter, just his swing is so, it's just gorgeous. And anybody who loves baseball, that's a thing that you can't teach or.
Yeah, I mean, he's got a great swing path and an excellent approach to the plate. Really good strike at the walk, patient hitter who doesn't put himself in situations early in counts where he's going to make weak contact. So, really advanced hitter. He's really embraced the other aspects of the game. That's something I was proud of him this year was he takes his base running very seriously. He takes his defense very seriously. And he gets a little tired at times of getting told he's only a hitter. So this is a guy that wants to be really good. Anyone who's met him, he's everyone in the world's little brother just because.
He texted me on Thanksgiving. Said, I know you were with your you went to see your family this Thanksgiving. I hope you had a good one.
Yeah, no, he's just a great guy. Really, like you said, I mean, he's a goofball. He's a lovable kid. He's just a lot of fun to be around and a great teammate.
Yeah, and the other thing with Jesse, where do you, a lot of people want him right away. What is it that he needs to do, and when do you expect to see him in the big leagues?
No pressure. I know that's there,
putting
Jeff.
You on the spot.
He's a tough one. I mean,
when would you like to? What's best
I'm
case scenario?
The hitter's hit. This is a kid who's got a track record of hitting. He's got a track record of doing it the way you'd like to see hitters do it, where he is showing patience but driving balls, relatively low strikeout rate. I think he'll probably open up the years in the minor leagues. Hopefully he has a great couple months and we see him sooner than later. But
MLB.com called him a future batting champion.
That's high praise. I mean, that's tough to do, especially when you do have a slugging component to your game. But batting average, I mean, I think he'll be right up there with anybody in terms of grinding out quality at bats.
Ben Lively was your pitcher of the year.
Yeah.
Here's a guy, and tell me if I'm wrong on this, I see him as like Mike Leake but taller.
Yeah, I mean, similar.
Bulldogs on the mounds.
Yeah,
you know.
This is one of the most intense competitors you'll ever see. I think I was at a game in May or June where he gave up maybe like his fifth earned run of the season.
Yeah.
Which was amazing.
His start was otherworldly.
Nuts. He was really mad. So this is a guy that I think a lot of what gets lost in Ben Lively is that we did challenge him early in the season. And he jumped to high A, to a hitter's environment in the Cal League, and was putting up numbers that were video game-like.
He didn't walk a guy until like his, what, sixth, seventh start or something?
I think he had, I don't remember which one it was, but I think he had a 40-1 strikeout to walk at some point. Was really effective. And like I said, anyone who's followed the minor leagues knows that that's a tough pitching environment. He was really effective. He forced our hand to have to promote him to Double-A, where he struggled a little bit, but like we talked about, it was great to see him settle in. He finished well. And I think a lot of his struggles were just tied to the fact that he's a Pensacola native. I mean, that's
right.
That's where he's from. I think he's from Gulf Breeze, right down the road.
It's really between Pensacola and Pensacola Beach.
Yeah, so, I mean, I think he put a little more pressure on himself, but settled in, had a great finish, and we're really happy to see what he's going to do.
And it's not just a regular guy going to the minor leagues. This is a place that sells out all the time. It's a lot like Dayton.
Yeah.
Beautiful facility, and they've only had the team for 3 years, and this is their first guy, their first homegrown player to play in Pensacola. And so there was, coming off what he did, I think that was kind of interesting. It was a, you don't get that in the minor leagues very much, these kind of situations.
Yeah, no, there's only a handful of guys that are known before they walk into a park, and Ben going to his hometown, I mean, there were a lot of questions in Pensacola for weeks beforehand about when's Ben going to get here. So he handled it well. He handled his class, and he's on his way.
Kyle Waldrop. This guy seems to kind of get, because he's another left-handed hitter, kind of plays a corner outfield. He can also play first base. Seems like he gets overlooked sometimes because of everybody's talking about Winker. But hitters are going to hit. This guy's a hitter.
Yeah. No, Kyle... I mean, funny story with Kyle is we got to spring training this year, and he'd been hitting all winter with our hitting coordinator, Ryan Jackson. They live about an hour apart. And he came out to me, and same thing. Anyone that knows Kyle knows he is a really quiet, reserved kid. And he kind of grabbed my shoulder and said, I'm going to be an animal this year. I was like, okay. I mean, that's probably like the 15th word Kyle's ever said to me. So,
and he hit 338, 385, 516 with 14 homers. In 131 games between Bakersfield and Pensacola.
Yeah, and we had Kyle, I mean, he knew
and,
all
and
along.
This is also a big, in Pensacola, which is a tougher environment, it hit 315, 359, 517, hit 8 of his 14 homers in Pensacola, which is kind of opposite what you expect going from the Cal League to the Southern League.
Exactly, and Kyle, he really improved his approach this year. He opened up the field, used the opposite field more. I think he realized exactly how strong he is, which this is a really strong, good athlete with huge power. And then in addition to having a great offensive year, he added first base into his repertoire as well, which any outfielder coming in towards the ball can be a little bit of a scary proposition for him. These guys used to having a little bit of time and not having this thing right on top of them. So.
It's funny you mentioned that because I saw that in the AFL. You saw a lot of guys, that's where they can do that. In the AFL, they can play around with that. And I saw some first basemen in the AFL who were, and Kyle didn't look out of place.
No, he did a great job with it. He's got good hands. He's still learning the position, but Kyle had a really nice season. I think he really earned his promotion to the 40-man roster. And he's one of the guys that I was most happy with this year.
Another guy I saw in the AFL, and he's not someone I hear about, like, you know, Baseball America isn't throwing his name around, and it's not all the things, but Juan Perez is a guy that I only hear from baseball, like scouts, who just say, I love this kid.
Yeah.
It's kind of like it's one of those...
Yeah, if you watch Juan play for a week, every day when you leave the park, you're going to like him more than you did when you got there. And he grows on you. He's an absolute gamer. This year, we mixed second base into his kind of repertoire a little bit. He's shown the ability, he can bounce all over, he can run. He's actually got good power for a kid his size. And left-handed hitting middle infielders are tough to find. I mean, especially with the advances in pitching and data and all the information that these pitchers have, right-on-right matchups are becoming more and more difficult, left-on-left the same way. So anytime you can get a guy who can hit from the left side at a position that's almost exclusively right-handed dominant, it's a huge advantage. So Juan had a really nice fall league. I was proud of him out there, and excited to see what he can do next year.
Okay, I was told one more.
Last one. And then we have one question, and we're going to wrap it up.
Through my guys. you know, this is a guy I think made a really big jump this year, even though a lot has been expected of him. It's Nick Trivioso.
Yeah. Now, Nick, I was really, Nick did a great job this year. I mean, he repeated Dayton, which was a push for him in 13. I mean, we promoted him, we wanted him experience, wanted him to have that adversity we've been talking about. This year he came in and said, I'm going to be outstanding. He's in great shape. He was throwing harder. At the end of the season, he was 92, 96, consistently with a hard fastball. I think this is one of the little things that we get to track, but the Dayton team was in a playoff race. And they were about a game up, game down, almost every other day through the last month of the season. And Nick, I think, went 4-0 with a 1.5 ERA over his last four starts. He just said, every time I have the ball, we're winning this game. And it was just so much fun to watch. I was really proud of him. He was such a bulldog out there. And I think it set him up for future success. And I think he understands how good he can be.
All right, and then one other question before we get to our other. You guys move from the Cal League to the Florida State League. As a guy who has to travel to all these places, that's got to be huge for you. But what does this do for the organization, and what are the advantages of being in the Florida State League over the Cal League at the high A level?
Yeah, I think my wife's probably the most excited just because the phone calls will be at 10:30 instead of 2:30 now. So if anything happens after the game. But just going from, we had a good relationship with the people in Bakersfield, and I mean, there's just not much you can do when the sun's in your eyes at 7:30.
It's the most unique playing environment in baseball.
Yeah, so we're very, very excited about our relationship with Daytona. I was actually able to go down there and see the facility. It's a great spot. It's in a good league.
It's the only, I think I read this, the only stadium in the Florida State League that's actually a dedicated minor league stadium that's not a...
I believe that's true. And they draw well. I mean, it's 2,500 people there at night. Great fans. They actually just unveiled their logo. They're going to be the Daytona Tortugas with a pretty good looking uniform and a good mascot. So we're excited. It's going to be a really good step in between Dayton and Pensacola for our players.
And staying in the Eastern time zone.
It's huge.
And the only, now I guess the only two are Rookie Billings and Pensacola. The other team in the same state of Florida, the only two that aren't in the Eastern time zone.
Yep.
Which has got to be
really nice for us.
Very nice for Mrs. Grappe.
Exactly.
All right, we do have one question. What is your name?
Doug.
Doug, where are you from?
Cincinnati.
Terrific. And what's your question?
Trent asked about all of the guys that were in the minor league system for the Reds this year, but it seems that they've made quite a few interesting signings on the minor league free agent side of things. What can you tell us about some of those guys?
You know, we've been really kind of harvesting that market and trying to figure out who can come in and compete for a major league role. I think you've got guys like Josh Satin, who's a guy that we've seen professional at-bats from. We think he has a high percentage of quality at-bats with the ability to play a bunch of different infield spots. You have Brendan Bosch, who had a great year this year in the PCL and has always shown the ability to hit right-handed pitching. We have Wilmer Font, who we're excited about, who's with the Rangers organization with a huge arm, hoping can kind of fit in a similar realm with the Jumbo Diaz plan. And then there's other guys I'm sure I'm missing. Jose Cisneros coming off Tommy John surgery. He's got a year of major league time. So we're trying to be creative, find ways to get guys on low risk contracts with high reward situations. So
sounds super easy.
Yeah, no, it's
but like Jumbo was a guy like
Jumbo
that.
Is a great example.
It's a great example. I mean, the funny thing about Jumbo to me is when he got called up to the majors, you saw on Twitter players from every organization like congratulating Jumbo and were genuinely happy that this guy at 30 finally was getting his chance.
Yeah, and you see it all the time. I mean, you get guys that make their debut, put the time in, put the work in, and are that quality of person. One of our minor league pitching coaches, Tony Fosses, I believe spent 11 minor league seasons before he made his debut and then spent 10 more seasons in the big leagues. So,
yeah.
I mean, it's just career paths are unconventional.
And that's got to be great to have that kind of example in-house for your younger guys of, like, this is why you stay at it.
exactly.
until your chance comes, because you don't know when it's going to come, but you have to be ready for it when it does.
Exactly.
Very cool. Well,
dude, this was awesome.
It was so great. It was so great, man.
And, second year in a row, we're going to have a third one. I think we talked about it. We're going to get you, finally, the death match in a bar this time, because you always get the Reds Fest slot.
I know, yeah. I get the advantages of Reds Fest.
And we're going to get you the Stats versus Scout.
Yeah,
Scouts,
you and Grossman.
You and Sam Grossman, battle to the death.
No, come on.
It's going to be so exciting.
That's my guy.
Sam's the best. And we can maybe put a little... I of course, joke about the Stouts versus Scats. Scouts versus Stats thing, because it's terribly overblown and silly. And anybody who's been around baseball knows that it's not a thing anymore.
Yeah.
Because you use Stats probably as much as anybody, and nobody loves Scouts or thinks more about Scouts than... like Sam or, you know, some of the people, even the Astros, you know, I have friends in the Astros, and, you know, they love, the Scouts are so important to them, they have such a huge scouting thing, it's just silliness. And, except that one night when we get it scheduled.
Yeah,
yeah,
it's going to happen.
Lots of the blows will come.
No, this was fantastic, and for those of you listening at home who have not made it to Reds Fest, it is a... premier event for any baseball fan, but especially if you're a Reds fan, it is an absolute no-brainer, and you really need to come down and check it out, because no matter how long you've been a fan, if you're a new fan or an old fan, there is something here for you, and we hope that you will join us. Be sure to follow us on Twitter, at @ctrent, at Josh Sneed. Are you on Twitter, Jeff?
Twitterless.
Still not? All right, we're going to have to change that. Yeah. We got Sam on Twitter. Yeah. Now we got to get Jeff on there.
How many tweets did Sam have?
Maybe two or three.
Does he have that many?
I would say it's still a zero.
Is he still a zero?
Still the egg.
If I know Sam, it's zero.
He's still got the egg avatar. Don't forget to follow @Inquirer and @InquirerSports for all of your CDOT and other local sports and news needs. We will also be putting on Twitter and the Facebook page when the next show will be at Motor sometime in January. So we hope you'll be part of our live audience down there. Yeah. So on behalf of my co-host Trent Rosecrans, I am Josh Sneed, saying thank you very much for joining us on the CDOT show. Special thanks to Jeff Grappe for joining us once again. We'll see you next time.